Hello, and welcome to Ready for Nintendo. It's June 10th, 2021, and this is a particularly, look, this is going to be one of our least listened to episodes of RFN of the year. It just is. We know this. Because it's coming out during an E3 branded experience. I'm reluctant to call this E3. But
the problem is, doesn't the experience make it E4?
Well, we'll talk about that. I've got some hot E3 news to break. I'm gonna break some stories that won't be news by the time this comes out, because this is gonna come out on Monday and E3 will already be half over at that point. So right out of the gate, we have our plans for E3, and what we're going to do is insert plans here.
What do you mean? Didn't you forgot?
Do we have them?
Don't we? I thought we were doing a live thing.
We are, but we don't have a time.
Okay. Well,
do we want to just negotiate on the air and let everybody hear it? Because I'm fine with that. I'm fine with letting them behind the scenes.
Is 8 too early for you, John? Like, eight. I mean, an hour earlier than usual.
No. I mean, so what would that be specifically? 5:30 PST?
Why would 8 be 5:30?
What is 8?
It would be PM. 5. Yeah.
Be 5.
That's, yeah, it's 8 in what time zone? That's why I'm asking.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because 8 for Guillaume would not be 8 for me.
We're just not dealing with half time zones here.
That was the part that confused me.
But when you said an hour earlier than normal, we always start at 6:30 PST my time, so that's why I said 5:30.
That's
like, he's right.
I'm not crazy.
Not by design.
This explains a lot.
I'm not crazy.
That it's true. We start at 6:30. We should start at 6.
Like, we have never started at 6. I cannot remember.
That's true.
We actually have.
Let's give them a little peek behind the curtain. We didn't realize it was a shower curtain, and now they've just seen us naked.
I actually, right before I got here to record, I was like, oh shit, I'm late. Like, it was like 9:03, and Ken was like, yeah, you got to be there on time so that you can wait for an hour before recording.
Hey!
Yep.
Hey.
Yep.
47 minutes. We've been going for 3 minutes, so really it's more like 44.
Uh-huh. Sure. See, it's all coming out now. Rip that seal off there and just let it all out. Let it all out.
We haven't heard Greg. I haven't consulted Greg.
Well, it's all going to be late at night in there, so it doesn't really matter. Just to set the time, and then I'll be there for it.
Okay.
Yep. So this is going to be Tuesday, June 15th at 5 p.m. PST. Done. I'm there.
So there it is. We didn't tell them what we're going to do, but there's going to be a live show. We're just going to be at NintendoWorldReport.com. NintendoWorldReport.com. Where there will be an article that will have a link in it that will tell you how to listen. And I'm going to have to probably re-up the account I bought for streaming radio from the last live show, but that's okay. It was like $5. Whatevs.
Bill that right to Neil.
Send that bill right to Neil?
Yep.
Last time we did a live show, their counter that's supposed to like tick down as you use bandwidth was busted. And so I actually didn't spend any of the credit I bought. But I think the credit expired anyway.
Yeah.
Because now it's like 6 months old. So, yeah, that's cool. So, Tuesday, you'll hear Nintendo's announcements for the year. You'll have some time to process them. And then at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific, that would be midnight? No, that'd be midnight UTC. It'd be 1 in the morning
summertime.
In the UK.
Yeah.
2 in the morning in continental Europe. I'm not going to do the rest of time zones. You can figure it out. I've given you a lot of time zones to use for reference. We will do a live reaction to Nintendo's announcements. And we will have the Discord up so you can give us some thoughts in there. We won't do call-ins. We're just going to try to keep this relatively brisk. But, you know, if you want to put some comments in there, we'll read them and we might react to them. And you could ask some questions and we'll figure it out from there. And then that, if you can't make it, that's okay. That episode will go live hopefully that night. I'll just try to throw it together and put it up. And hopefully it's a fun one. And we have something to make it worth me messing with that, possibly using only one arm. We'll figure it out. It'll be a good time. So join us for that. If you can't, that's okay. The episode will go live very soon thereafter. The funny thing is, we'll be recording this after E3 is over. Like, the whole thing. The whole show. The whole shebang.
Well, it's from a sequencing point of view, there's a logic to that, for once. So.
That's true. It just happens
no
to be a
more,
very...
There's no more one more things to worry about anywhere might, from anyone.
There might be, because I think the award show thing is going on at that point. Something might pop on us there, but probably not. So that's cool. We'll see you then. Also, if you can't get enough of this kind of, I'm just going to call it frippery. You can go to the Nintendo World Report Patreon, or we have posted our May Patreon episode where we watched GoldenEye, the movie based on a video game.
It's very prescient.
Yeah. It's bad. It's a bad movie. It's a surprisingly bad movie.
It's like this game that's going to come out 2 years from now is going to kick ass. We need to get ahead of
it. It's going to redeem this movie.
It's the inverse X versus Sever. It's the X versus Sever inversion. But
I don't think it's a terrible movie, but I don't think it's a good one either.
It's bad. It's bad.
I wouldn't go that far, personally. But
really?
Yeah. I wouldn't go that far. It
was watchable.
Yeah, it's a watchable movie.
But it's really not the worst movie we've watched by far.
Nobody has said that. But that doesn't... I mean, that's such a low fucking bar, Guillaume.
The bar is low. I mean, what can I say? I mean...
But we did... We lowered the bar on ourselves. Mm-hmm. Usually when you lower the bar, it's not a guillotine blade. And yet, here we are.
Speaking of guillotine, I think you've put yourself in under the blade to pick the next one, James.
Yeah,
so,
I'm gonna, and it's gonna be a good movie.
Yeah, but will it be fun to talk about? See, that's the...
I got to watch a good movie.
Yeah, but this is the point, isn't it? You give it all this about, oh, why are they all so bad and all that, and it's just like, yeah, let's talk about the Deer Hunter. It's like, good movie. That episode is gonna be like fucking...
When I think of having a good time, I think watching The Deer Hunter, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the choice I would have gone with here, but okay.
I hate to give you a little peek behind the linguistic or sort of rhetorical curtain here, but sometimes we say things that are sort of extreme examples for effect. The general point of that, sometimes a good film will not produce a fun, silly discussion. So,
or does it have to be a silly? Why does every discussion have to be silly? Why can't it just be a good discussion?
Let's just watch The Godfather.
If you think we could do a legit, straight up good discussion about a film, you've got more confidence than I have.
I think we should watch Deliverance. Like, it should be funny. It's got Warren Beatty. It's got like banjos. It seems cute.
I legitimately just... Oh, that movie. Oh. I can't do it. That movie's on that list of like noped out twice trying to get through it. Just can't do it.
Let's do something else with Burt Reynolds, Smokey and the Bandit.
Okay. No, that's an amusing movie. It's not good, but it's amusing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it's got like 2 degrees of Pierce Brosnan, right? Like, isn't Sally Fields in there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
She is.
And she's in Mrs. Doubtfire with Pierce Brosnan.
There you go. His best role. And mm-hmm. that's a okay movie. It's okay for what it's trying to do. And there's probably a lot you could talk about on that one. So there you go. See, I think it's doable. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that movie. If I'm picking the movie and it has to be some kind of video game relevancy. Well, I think that's our mistake.
It doesn't have to be. But.
Yeah, that's where we keep fucking up. We're like, there's got to be video game related movie. And the answer is no, there's not. There just isn't. Move on. So anyway, you can get that. Patreon.com and NWR, $1. $1 a month. That was our 24th episode. We didn't notice it at the time because I lost count. That's 2 years worth of those things.
Yeah,
that's,
so we're definitely putting a lot of focus on this, you know. So much so that we put so much focus into it that we lose count of the number of episodes that we have.
Yeah, that's it. $1. For $1 a month, you have
$1
over...
$1 for this meticulously crafted podcast.
Sir, allow me to finish the pitch. For $1, you have over 24 hours, a full day of weird Patreon content. That includes Jeff Keighley, the supervillain continuity system, which is the extended universe of Jeff Keighley and his supervillain powers, which came to a head today in the most boring, I'm going to say it felt like 7.5 hour presentation I've ever seen. So that was fun. And by fun, I mean it was incredibly dull. And Weezer was there. Weezer, that band known as the one who had one of their music videos on your father's Windows 95 PC.
Hey, at least they're still getting paid.
Somehow. They should really just be doing music about, like, I spoke to my financial accountant about buying a retirement home and similar things, not like meeting girls and stuff, which is what their new song was about or some shit like that. So I don't know what we're doing anymore. Anyway, we're going to kind of keep this episode off the rails, apparently. No, we're going to do some new business and then we're going to call it. So I am actually going to kick us off because I have new business of the E3 variety. We've been talking about E3, so that is the way to do it. My new business is a website. The E3. So we've been joking about what the fuck are online booths, digital booths, things that they've been calling them. What's a digital E3? What does that even mean? And here is my answer to you. A digital E3 is a buggy ass website. So Monday was the start of Media Week, where members of the press were basically all at the same time received our notice from the ESA that we should go log into this website they've set up, the E3 portal, and set up our accounts, and then we can start visiting the booths. And the booths are literally just like pages inside the website that there's some degree of customization to in terms of look and feel, and you can add some custom buttons. It's basically shit you could do in SharePoint. But it's not SharePoint. It appears to be a custom build. And so when you sign into this thing for the first time, you're hit with some questions. And then you are asked to make an avatar. And that avatar is like really shitty Miis, like sub-quality Miis. And I wasn't really able to capture my essence. But what I found is that a lot of people who do them basically just fucked around and created like horrible green monster people. But broadly speaking, there really wasn't much I could do to do that. But all I could think of at the time is, why is this here? Because this isn't really, I mean, John, when you think of E3, you think about making a Mii to represent yourself, right?
Absolutely do. I'm surprised I've made it this long without it.
Yeah, so I did that for a while. My favorite button on the create an avatar was you can have the character, the headshot. It's a headshot. You can have them tilt their head. Why? I have no idea. I don't know why that's a choice. But they can only tilt it a little bit to the left or a little bit, like 5 degrees to the left or right. That's it. Some artist said, I want to draw this thing so it'll tilt 5 degrees to the left. And 5 degrees to the right, and no more. And so Mai has a slight head tilt to the left, because his right, because I don't know. So yeah, one that should have been my red flag that I was about to step into just an absolute shit show of a website. The funny thing is, pretty much the entirety of the game's press all went in at the same time, and all basically immediately went to Twitter because this website was a disaster. So they've got gamification in your E3. And in fact, their FAQs about gamification, they've got this FAQ that's insane. It has like all these frequently asked questions that there's definitely no way anyone ever possibly asked. Like, does your website have gamification? Why, yes, it does. How kind of you to ask. I would have never, ever, 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 ever thought to ask, does the E3 website have gamification? I think does the E3 website have a map where I can find shit? Is there a working schedule? No. On this website? Yes, there is not there, at least, well, there was at launch time, not a working schedule on the website. Why? I don't know. Reasons. But their gamification system has points and it has daily objectives. These don't appear to be the same thing. You get points for doing things. Basically, you earn badges that give you points, but the badges don't tell you why you earned them. And sometimes they don't display at all. There's just an empty image where a frame should be and something that says you earned 10 points. I was very confused by this system because I could only earn 10 points despite spending over 2 hours on this website. However, if you went to the leaderboard, because the FAQ makes it quite clear that you can, quote, win E3 by having the top score in the leaderboard. Again, I've got nothing. The top five, all of them were from South America, which feels somewhat interesting and doesn't seem statistically unlikely. Three of them were from Chile, which again seems statistically unlikely. I'm not suggesting the fix is in, but I'm suggesting the fix is definitely in. So, the only way to figure out how to score points was to communicate with other members of the press on Twitter to figure out how to score points. This is, of course, what we immediately set out to do because this is literally the Dark Souls of websites, and the only way to learn its secrets is to communicate online. That was unsuccessful. We also found that they have a message board. Why does the ESA have a message board for E3 website? No idea. Are there good things in it? Fuck no. What's in the message board is, I think it's 10 posts that the ESA themselves made. Oh, they've added some new ones. Ooh. They had one post called Health and Gaming. No subject. It was literally just Health and Gaming, and the message body of it was also Health and Gaming. They screwed up their own account. They didn't create an avatar for themselves, so they just hit the skip button that was hidden at the very bottom of the page that just uses your initials and puts them in a circle. Again, just like SharePoint, which they could have built this in. But they messed up by calling their account, their first name E3, second name 2021, which meant their little text logo was E2. It's like it was right there, guys. It was right there. They have fixed it since then. But they created a thread called Health and Gaming, which just resulted in members of first-time members of the press who are very excited about attending E3 posting the word health and responding to each other with the word gaming. So that was good. That was a useful expenditure of my time. There was a thread called, they've changed the topics. They deleted some of them. This is sad. I don't like this. So for a while there was like five threads and that was it. That was all there were. And there was one that was like next-gen gaming, and people just talked about whatever the heck they wanted to in there. But my personal favorite, let me see if I can find it. Where's he at? Where's he at? Where is our fearless leader? John Reardon had a post in here that literally just said, "So why does this website exist?" It was literally giving voice to exactly how I felt in that moment. What are we doing? Why are we here? Are we here but to suffer? Here we go. John Reardon, who has created this like really horrifying Jesus character. So, hate to be a downer. Why is the Media Week open when there's nothing to cover? He's referring to the fact that there were booths. There are these virtual booths and they're manned. So you like send them a message or you quote drop a business card and they reach out to you to talk about doing interviews and stuff. But nobody was responding to anything. So you would like post a message in there. A lot of the booths didn't have any content in them, like at all, because of course they haven't announced anything yet because the press conferences happen next week. So there was just nothing in them. So like, why would you even do this thing? How is this Media Week when there's nothing in it? So it's back to John's comment. So, I hate to be a downer, ellipses. Why is Media Week open if there's nothing to cover? This would be like opening the show floor to the media before exhibitors show up. And so ESA admin number 3 responds, "Hi, John. The portal opened ahead of the official E3 broadcast to give media the opportunity to browse booths, engage with exhibitors, and explore. More booths and content will be added daily." So I tried to get to the bottom of why people weren't responding to your requests. And I did this by messaging John himself because there's a friends list. You can search for anybody who's registered. So that's definitely not going to be a problem.
And so you are messaging John within the website.
Yes. So I added John Reardon as a friend. Mm-hmm. Oh, actually, he added me and I had an invite. So I accepted his invite. And then I sent him a message that reads, oh, it doesn't read anything because all the messages are gone. That's cool. Good tools. Good tool set. So I basically sent him a message that says, hi, John, I want to know if you can see this. I bet the messaging system doesn't work. Race car flag. No response. So I then went and made fun of him in our own Discord saying he's either ignoring me because fuck this guy.
That's legit.
He didn't get the message at all because the website's broken, or he didn't get any notification that he has new messages. It was the third. There was no notification he has new messages. And to prove this, he messaged me. And again, the only reason I saw it was I went into my friend relationship with him and his response was listed there.
Sweet.
So this is also the interface that you request time to talk to Boost with. So as you can imagine, this is not an ideal situation.
So this is an app that the media is using. Are people going to use the same app?
Why, yes, they are, Guillaume.
But no one's actually going to bother with that, right? Like, people are going to watch the trailers online and that's it.
Probably true. But the ESA wants people to post exclusive content and shit to their booth. So
are these virtual booths like?
Well, let's talk about them. So
yeah.
Bad is the word I would use to start with. Let's pick one at random. Arcade 1UP. So Arcade 1UP announced an arcade cab of what was it?
The Simpsons?
Yeah, The Simpsons.
Yeah, or did they? Because they took it down afterwards.
Well, they're all listed on their website. On their ones they haven't announced yet were listed in their booth, including The Simpsons.
I see.
I was like, is this news? Should I say something? I'm not going to say anything because I don't know if I'm supposed to. I obviously was not supposed to. But they have an about section, which is just a description of themselves. They have products, which is now just listed the products that they publicly announced, not the ones that they haven't. They have an events calendar. It is empty. This seems to be a constant for every single one of them. They have a media section, which is just where they post video and images. And usually it's just like, here's a link you click. Oh, it opened up a YouTube thing in a modal. Then they have articles. That's usually just press releases. Then there's like some custom buttons. They have one to go to their store. There's a follow button so you can get updates for the booth. I don't know where the updates go, but they go somewhere. You can drop your business card, which my business card is my slightly head tilted profile with I'm going to say slightly anime antagonist eyes and my email address. And it shows I've got 75 points somehow. Do you want to share your booth? No, I don't want to send them my card. Then there's a message, which as we've discussed, does not work. And then there's a rewards button. Rewards button is that gamification stuff. And it only shows up for ones that have put, achievements on their booth. For a while, the achievement list that you could access from your profile just had the achievement name, but not actually what booth it was. So it would just say, check out 6 of our trailers. And then no context for what booth you should be checking out those 6 trailers on. Day 2, they added whose booth they were for. So that was we'll call it an oversight. You still can't actually claim any of these. I've got a few that I've been trying to claim, but I've gotten no points for. You would click the button, it would buffer, and nothing would happen. John, you'll enjoy this. For the first few days, every single interaction with the APIs, everything, including the entire message payload and the header, was being pushed to the debug console. John, do you care to explain why that might be a problem?
Yeah, because you would be able to see every single thing that's being passed to the API.
Yeah! Do you think I was reverse engineering their gamification API?
Yes. Yeah.
Did I finish? No.
It would also show, you know, personally, you know, PII.
Possible. Possible.
Like,
I didn't test that, but I would guess it probably did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've never learned.
They've never learned. Well, it's okay now because now you can just search for people. So everybody who signed up, it will be here and you can search for them. So it was demanding I add Jeff Keighley as a friend. I'm not going to do that because we know that he is the Antichrist. So we're not doing that. But
should we, like, for context, what's PII again? Personally identifiable?
Personally identifiable information.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, basically they're doxing people again, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, even your email address is considered PII.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
Email, so, phone number.
Anything, yeah. Anything like that that somebody could use to track you down in some way, shape, or form.
Yes. But don't worry, because now your profiles are going to be searchable, so that's fine.
Great.
love it. I love it. So when the general population comes in, that message board is going to be on fire, and the boost. And I don't think gamification will be working by then, so that's going to be fun. My favorite booth, though, well, there's IGN China, which I'm pretty, and IGN, they have different booths, presumably because in the IGN China booth, if you say the word Taiwan, you'll be banned for life. Also, don't say the word Canadian, because that was on their filter list for a little while, because apparently some white supremacist trolls use that as a word to get around other word filters to refer to groups they don't like. And of course, the ESA, a trade group representing U.S. and Canadian publishers, decided, yeah, that's okay. That should be on our filter list. I don't think it is anymore. I hope it's not.
That's too bad. I'm fully, you know, behind censoring Canadians.
But it's not the Canadians themselves. It's just censoring about talking about
it. That's why I had to leave the country. I couldn't stand it anymore.
But my favorite booth, the most important booth, is, of course, the Atelevision Amico booth. Which, of course, they've got a booth. Fucking scam artists.
Of course they do.
So
does it have a yellow Lamborghini in it? That's what I want to know.
It does not. It's got a bunch of Wii style, from the old Wii Would Like to Play ad campaign pictures with people holding the Amico controller. It's got a link to themselves, which actually just goes to their store. I could drop a business card or send a message. They actually don't have any gamification set up on theirs, which I'm shocked by. Their press conference isn't on there, which is great, on their schedule. They do have a press conference. They said it was going to be 10 minutes in prime time, if you'll remember last week. John, do you want to guess when it is? 10 minutes in prime time. What do you think prime time is?
10 minutes in prime time?
That was what they were saying last week.
You mean like what time wise?
Yeah, what time of day would you say that would probably be?
Prime time is typically 7 p.m.
What if I said 9:45 in the morning? Would you call that prime time?
I would not call that prime time. I mean, it's prime time somewhere, I'm sure. But
so that's their time slot. The highlight is they got 30 minutes and they're sticking to their guns that it's only going to be 10 minutes. They're like, "No, we fuck that 20 minutes you gave us. We're not using it." So they have their media, which is, this is actually my favorite part of their booth, is like 20 trailers, almost all of which have no views, which means the person who uploaded them didn't even click it to make sure they're good.
Or maybe the counter doesn't work, because why would that be surprising?
It does. It does. I've tested on a bunch of their videos have one view because of me. And then their article page is just links to like, an IGN article from June. Television Amico wants to make games simple again. What? And then, like I said, they don't have any gamification, which I'm legitimately shocked by. Have I dropped a business card there? Maybe. Stop asking questions. There are daily quests, as I mentioned. They still don't work. We're on day 5. It's fine. Everything's fine. I have 75 points. I cannot figure out how to score anymore. But if you're curious, the current leader has, from Chile, again, has 220 for today. Yesterday, somebody managed to rack up 3.3K, a different person from Chile. And then second place, also from Chile, had 2.6. And then we had two people from Korea who had 2,000 and 1,000, and somebody from Brazil with 1,000. I don't understand this system. Today, the high score has 50. What is going on? This is so dumb. It's amazing.
Maybe it's a very thoughtful commentary about how in years past, all that chat about who won E3 was really stupid.
Well, I got really excited because in their gamification section, they basically say you can win E3. And I'm like, I can win E3. So as I made fun of them on Twitter for like, I'm going to say the last 4 days, there was a real moment that I might get banned from the E3 website. Cause like I was starting to post things that like, I mean, technically this isn't publicly available, but fuck it. I don't care. I asked Neil, if I get banned, can I hijack his account if I promise to quote win E3 for him? And I have a thumbs up. So if I get banned from the E3 website, I get to become Neil Ronahan and win E3. So you can look forward to my quest to take over the top slot. I like that their scoreboard, which tells you that they just borrowed this from something else, has today, yesterday, and weekly. It's a week-long event. Why would you have a weekly scoreboard?
Still, it does sound to me like the Matrix sequels. It starts with you taking over Neil, and then you're just going to take over everyone. And you will be everyone on the E3 website.
It's good. That would be an excellent plan. There's a Norton 360 ad that just hangs out in the top right corner, the top left corner. It's just there. That's where it lives. Norton always telling you, limited time offer, $1 for the first year. Claim it now. And then there's an active people thing. It just tells you who's logged in. There's hundreds of people logged in, but here's five of them. Just random. You could just message them if you want. You could say, hi, buddy. I'd like to add you. Can we be friends? I have somebody following me. I have no idea who it is. Just one person randomly following me. That's cool. I followed Neil, but I tweeted about it saying I was going to creep on him. Then he became a friend somehow. He didn't add me as a friend, and I didn't request to be his friend. But we're friends now. I don't know. This is great. This is a great website.
That's the thing, though. The ESA has all your info, and they have Neil's info, and so they know naturally who's friends with who. So
maybe that's it. The only thing I've been able to do successfully that actually applies to my job is I was able to say I would like to attend the Square Enix conference, which is just a video I could watch literally anywhere. That's it. I have used this thing for hours. The only thing I have successfully done is say, yes, I would like to watch that YouTube video. What a fucking amazing tool set they've put together. They could just built this in Teams in what, like an hour? Couple hours? What do you think?
I mean, it seems very basic, but yeah, they probably paid an agency $500,000 to do it or something.
It's amazing. I hope that agency, after they spent the $10,000 to make this, ran off with the rest of it.
Yep.
The Otterbox Games one is probably the most advanced booth. I don't know why, but it is. The Otterbox booth does have achievos, but it won't let me cash them in. One of them is one of their achievements, which is my favorite, is what? It's just a link to an Instagram. And then you get 20 points. I don't know how to earn that. Another one's just a link to their Twitter, and you get 20 points. Again, I don't know how to earn that. But the other one they have on there is, watch all the videos in our media section. It's like, no. I'm not going to do that. Thank you. Otterbox has more followers than a television, just in case you're curious. Nintendo has the most followers last I checked, but that's not particularly surprising. Nintendo's booth is literally just, we have a thing, it's later, you can watch it. Fuck this shit, we're out. That's what E3 is. And a bunch of people posting in the forum, this is my first E3, I'm so excited. And I'm like, y'all, I'm glad you're excited, but this ain't E3, y'all. So, that's where we're at right now. So, look forward to that, I guess. I'm having way more fun with this thing than I should, but mostly because it's bad. I've logged a lot of defects that I should just email like, here's 140 defects.
When are we going to get to talk about good websites? I don't understand. Yeah. That's way more fun to talk about.
NintendoWorldReport.com, Greg. That's where you'll be able to see all the E3 coverage. That's a good website. It's been around for a long time. Not that name. Well, at this point, it's been around for a long time.
It's been pretty long.
If you want a good website that actually has content in it and not one where it says all the booths are live at all time, whatever that means, NintendoWorldReport.com will have E3 news you can actually consume, unlike this thing, which is almost impossible to navigate. So you can look forward to that. We're going to have a good time. Hope to see you there because we're going to start posting news already. We're going to start posting news in the past because the Switch news has already started to come out and we've been posting it there. So that's when we're going to talk about good websites, Greg. Right fucking now. John, we're going to talk about bad video games.
Yeah, well, We're going to talk about Haze. And the Holy Grail, as I would refer to it as.
Is it?
So, yeah. So it did come in the mail. It came all the way from Panama City, Panama. It was mailed at the World Trade Center in Panama City, Panama, of all things. And it came to me. You know, I look, my attitude is generally hope for the best, expect the worst.
Yep.
This is a case where I hoped for the best, and I don't know if this was the best outcome, but, you know, darn it, if this game did not arrive at my doorstep in perfect condition, sealed. Now, I could tell that it was legit, because my first thought was, you know, okay, whatever, it's going to be a bootleg or something. No, it's legit. And you can tell just from the look of the plastic that it is probably been sitting on a shelf for about 13 years.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, I'm not surprised that it's still in its packaging, because, like, you know sometimes how, like, some stores, instead of saying previously used, will say previously loved? Mm-hmm. Well, it's Haze that we're talking about here. There's no such copy.
Previously unloved.
previously unwanted, actually, I think would be this accurate.
Oh,
this
one. Well, that makes your action sound kind of sweet now. Because you've given it a home. You know,
don't let him get away with that.
This one needed a home. So, yeah. So, it was interesting. So, I get this thing, and I'm just like, wow, this is in great shape. And, you know, I open it up, you know, just breathe in the scent of Haze, you know, to get the full...
Breathe in the Haze?
What does that smell like?
Smells like Jonathan Davis.
Oh,
great.
I immediately loaded up, and I'm just waiting for something to go wrong. So, you know, I throw the disc in, and the splash screen comes up, and it says, corrupt game data. Please quit the game and try again, or load it again. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm thinking, all right, this disc probably went bad. And, you know, it's been sitting there for 13 years, and maybe something happened with the disc, and I'm not going to get to be able to play this after all. So after all of this, this is the end of the road. But what actually had happened was that I had downloaded, there's a DLC pack on the PlayStation 3 store, and I had downloaded that ahead of time. Well, apparently, when you have that in place on your disc, when you try to load the game up for the first time, it just doesn't like that, and it won't let you do it. So I had to delete the DLC pack. So we're already off to a great start. But I haven't had any problems with it since. So, you know, I found it funny and ironic that I did have to download a game update for it. And I actually turned on my PS3. I had to update my PS3 too, which is weird because I just updated it a couple of weeks ago, when I plugged it in for the first time in forever.
It's still at it, guys. That's my main memory of using the PS3 at this point.
It's just catches.
It's how often it was being updated. But at least it was an active platform.
Yeah, they're still updating it. I mean, So I applied the update, and I actually did download the DLC pack for it. I haven't played around with it at all. But Haze, yeah, let's talk about Haze. So, one interesting thing, though, I will say, which is very, I chuckled at this. So every time you boot up the game, apparently they had their online gameplay was through a platform called Demonware, which is probably defunct. I've never seen it. But okay. So when the game boots up, it tries to, well, at first it tries to connect to PSN. And then it tries to connect to the online server. And, of course, when it connects to the online server, there's no way to short-circuit that. There's no way to exit out of it. So you have to sit there and wait for probably about maybe a minute and a half, for the game to time out, for the connection to the online system to time out. And then it lets you into the main menu. So you have to do that every single time. And it's like, guys, could you not have let the user just... like opt out of logging in like that to the server? It's like, good God. Or try that after you go to the main menu, not before you go to the main menu. So in order to get to the campaign, you have to let the game time out when it tries to contact these servers that no longer exist. before you even get to the main menu. So I'm like, okay, again, off to a great start. But actually, you know, once I got rolling and everything, I mean, it's a mediocre game.
Hmm.
So Haze in a nutshell is you start off as a reluctant bro, and then through a series of events, you become an anti-bro.
What is a reluctant bro?
A reluctant bro. So, you know, nectar, right? That creates these super soldiers. So nectar is a drug that, you know, heightens when they wear these exoskeletons that inject nectar into them or whatever. And during gameplay, what you do is you have kind of, I think, 6 charges of nectar that you can inject, and they replenish over time. So you don't really, you run out of them very, very seldom, but you can run out of them. But it's just like kind of like almost like a turbo boost. So when you use nectar in the game, you know, it's a first person shooter. So you start to, you know, you run faster and you see your enemies outlined. So they're easier to distinguish from the background, stuff like that. So that's the gameplay hook of it. And in the plot, nectar is sort of this almost like a resource that's being fought over. It's produced by the Mantle Corporation because, you know, there's always in every first person shooter, there has to be some shadow corporation or some shady corporation that is the big bad, right? And so in this case, it's the Mantle Corporation. So what you do is you start off as this, your character is Shane Carpenter, and you start off as one of these Nectar soldiers, one of these Mantle Corporation soldiers. You were recruited by Mantle and you signed up to go, you know, be the hero and save the world and all that kind of stuff, right? But once you actually get into kind of the in there amongst the soldiers, you realize that they're all kind of very, very bro-y, you know, your typical bro-y, homophobic, very much kill or be killed, we're the carnivores, we're the predators, you know, that kind of stuff. That's their attitude. And your character is reluctant. And, you know, because of that, like, you know, they say, ah, you're a wussy and blah, blah, blah. Of course, they use stronger language than that. But there's that kind of thing where your character is cast as one of these Mantle Corporation super soldiers, but not mixing well with the other soldiers who are just a bunch of space marine macho men.
Hmm.
And so at that point, I'm just kind of rolling my eyes. But what it actually does, what does happen is that, you actually get the people that you're fighting, who you actually meet their leader, and their leader kind of tells you some stuff and tells you that you're sort of, what's really going on isn't what you thought what was going on. And you turn around and you actually join them. So you get to see, and that also ties into the multiplayer because those are the two factions that you can choose from. You can be one of the Mantle Corporation soldiers, or you can be one of the rebel soldiers. So at that point you are fighting the bros. So you go from being reluctant bro to anti-bro. And you know,
That's almost interesting.
Isn't it? Isn't it?
Like, as a commentary on, yeah, like on like Halo or like on shooters of the time.
Yes. It was more interesting than I thought it would be when they actually switched that around.
Hmm.
So
does it play anything like Time Splitters or no? Because of course that's the same developer, right?
Yeah, it's Free Radical.
Yeah. It doesn't play like Time Splitters at all. It's more Halo-ish, except I would say with sparser, less interesting environments.
What about AI driving? Does it have AI driving?
It doesn't have. Well, actually, I can't tell you if it does. I don't think it does.
Damn it!
They didn't. Like, you can get into vehicles. I've driven them every time, just because I hate AI driving. I hate that so much.
But it was so good in Halo.
Well, oh God, the AI overall is pretty terrible. Like, where if you hop into the vehicle and you do it near a wall, instead of looping around, because it has the same sort of thing where you have like you can drive the vehicle and then it has sort of three or four attached like kind of attachment points, right? Where like one of the AI troopers can hop on, like there's a seat on the left, seat on the right, seat on the back, and then there's a turret. So depending on what you're doing, any of these AI kind of troopers, because actually this is designed to be a co-op game as well. So you're always with a couple of other soldiers, and those soldiers can get hurt, and then you can revive them. So there's almost like kind of like Halo 5 sort of thing, where you always have like a little fire team around you, even though, you know, they're idiots. But yeah, the AI is bad, whereas at least in other games, if you put the vehicle like next to a wall, one of the little AI troopers will see that he can't get to one of the seats, and he'll go around to one of the other ones. The trooper will just get stuck on the wall, and he'll just sit there until you move the vehicle, and then he goes around up to the other side or whatever. So there's a lot of silly stuff like that. But in terms of the way the game plays, it's very much like outside of the whole Nectar thing, which really amounts to almost putting on night vision, really. Like the extra speed and stuff, it's the game's pretty slow to begin with, so it doesn't really add a whole lot. It's mainly you use it when you're fighting a bunch of enemies. They do some interesting things though with, they have grenades where you can throw them at a group of enemies and make the enemies fight each other, which is pretty cool. You can put grenades in the ground and leave them as mines, which is pretty cool. So they do a couple of interesting things. But overall, the campaign is very short. I mean, I got the game yesterday, and I played for probably maybe 3 or 4 hours last night, and I think I'm nearing the end of the campaign already. I mean, the campaign, I think, is about 7 hours long. That's what I've read.
Is this one of the, like, campaign is to get you into multiplayer things?
I guess. I did try the multiplayer. The multiplayer, because you can play the multiplayer with bots. So, of course, the multiplayer servers no longer exist, but you still can play the multiplayer maps with a bunch of bots if you, or you could do it. I think you can actually do local play as well. Gotcha. But it's very much kind of run of the mill. Like I think there's a couple of game modes. There's like a capture and hold game mode. Then there's just straight up deathmatch, of course. But I haven't gotten too much into that, but it doesn't seem like it's not anything out of the ordinary. And the maps don't seem to be much to write home about. The weapons aren't really anything too crazy. Like, usually these games, when they're dealing with, like, that super soldier motif, they have really weird weapons. But these ones are very, very run-of-the-mill. I mean, the only thing I've seen is, like, pistol, assault rifle, shotgun, rocket launcher, sniper rifle. Like, nothing weird. Nothing crazy, nothing inventive, just very straight down the middle. And I think that's really this game. It's not absolutely terrible, but it's very, it's just like, it does nothing really that inventive, beyond the story being a little bit different than usual, than what you would typically see.
And coming from Free Radical, those two things are kind of sad because, yeah. Free Radical has always had this perspective of, like, our story is goofy nonsense, and our gameplay is different. There's a lineage you could trace back to GoldenEye, but it always felt different than everybody else's shooters.
Yeah, and this one, and what's interesting too is placing this game into a context. So this came out in 2008. So when you think about the other first-person shooters that were out at that time, even on PlayStation 3, you're talking about, you know, Modern Warfare, Resistance Fall of Man. I mean, those are some really, really good first-person shooters, and then you play this, and it feels like it's just, yeah, it's not great. So, but I mean, I'm glad I got to play it, just out of curiosity. I'll play the campaign just because the campaign's so short. I'll definitely play it all the way through. And you can do some cool things, but it's also very much of the school of, remember when kind of the running joke was that all first person shooters and third person shooters were just brown everywhere? Yeah. That's pretty much Haze as well. You're always running through, oh, it's a factory, it's an industrial site, it's a bunch of rusted metal everywhere. Very much that kind of thing too, just because I think that's probably just less effort. Like this, I, This game really, really smacks of we are going to put in only as much effort to make a functional first-person shooter as we have to.
And see, I remember at the time this game being described as brown and yellow because of the motif of bees and stuff.
Yeah, that's very accurate. I also find really funny is that at the time this was kind of pitched as like it's supposed to be so many games so many first-person shooters they've said this about, but this was supposed to be a Halo killer, and that is hysterical. I mean, it's not even a conduit killer, really.
Jesus.
I mean, it looks better than the conduit, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, there's nothing here that hasn't been done better in, like, half a dozen other first-person shooters. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, even Free Radical at its best, if you were asking me to pick a team to give the PlayStation its Halo, I would not have picked them. Even if you're telling me this is going to be the best Free Radical game that's been made, it's just a different kind of beast
that they
produce.
Yeah, yep.
And there is a market for those that I think has been somewhat untapped. And as a consequence, I think that market might have dried up. But it's hard. It dried up because the industry has moved away from them to the point where someone looking at them might not be immediately apparent what their charms are in the same way. Because they are so different and divergent from what shooters are at this point in time. And there are multiple styles of shooters that are currently in vogue, but none of them are that.
Yeah. So, you know, if you look online, this game got pretty much like a 6 out of 10 across the board. And I would say that's accurate.
Cool. Good. Are you glad that you imported this from Central America?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm glad I got to play it. I was always curious about it. So okay. I was wanting to see how it played. So
this is what this podcast does. You end up buying games that you know aren't very good, but you're curious about.
Yeah. And, you know, it made for a good story. And there really, it's only about 7 hours of my time in the campaign. So.
Yeah, we do this for you, the listener.
Mm-hmm.
Guillaume, what have you done for the listener this week?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I wish I had my headliner were a Nintendo game, but it's not. After a play, you know, this talk of Haze and this game that people can't, Nintendo players can't touch, can't reach, like we're dangling it in front of them and they would want to play it, but they can't. I'm about to do the same thing with another game. So I've played A Way Out, that kind of a prison escape game that was at E3 like a couple of years ago, and where the director said, like, I think swore on stage on EA's presentation. So yeah, that game. So I played it with Karen. It is, if you remember, if you've seen this, or if you've never seen this, you don't remember, so I'm going to tell you. This is a co-op game, couch co-op. I think it can be played online, but yeah, it's got couch co-op, split screen, and basically you are collaborating to escape a prison, and you're playing as these two characters that I don't have, like, anything to remind me their names right now. It's been a couple of weeks now. But basically, like, they both have an axe to grind against this, kind of like drug baron or something. And so they plan their escape together. And, what that translates to is what I would call synchronized heavy rain. Basically, there are a lot of quick time events that you have to go through, and each person has to do their own thing, and so that translates into, you know, collaborating to you know, to make things happen, to escape prison. I this is very vague, but like there's like a whole bunch of scenarios, like you need a wrench at some point, and so you have to smuggle a wrench back to your prison cell, and so like you have to manage to like work the laundry room, and then like once you're in the laundry room, you have to like there might be multiple solutions. Like the solution that we found, basically Karen started a fight with the other inmates by basically, you know, very like it's very easy apparently. You just have to tell one guy like, hey, this other guy said something about your mom, and so that starts a fight and that distracts the guards, and then like while that happens, the other person can go sneak into like some back room, get the wrench, but then like you like slip it through some opening somewhere. You have to go pick it up. You have to coordinate to get that wrench through metal detectors on your way back to the cell. And of course, when you're in your cell, like there's a surprise inspection. And so you have to basically, while they're searching this one guy's cell, you have to pass the wrench to the other person and then pass it back when the inspection is up to your room. So anyway, so it's all like, you know, it's kind of neat. Like it's very, the prison stuff wasn't really the most interesting to me. It seems like incredibly easy to escape prison. I guess that's good news for if we expect to ever go to prison. Escaping prison is very easy.
That's good.
And this, like, they don't even try to make it look like real, you know, like they don't even try to make it believable.
Is this another one of the situations of Europeans, because the developer that made this, I believe, is European.
Yes.
Europeans trying to represent America, but not having any idea what America actually is?
No, I think they just, like, they had an idea for the gameplay, but they didn't want to put too much thought into, like, how do you actually escape prison? They had more, I think, ideas for, like, activities and, like, scenes, but then, like, they put them together, and, like, if reality got in the way, reality would lose.
So does this portray being in prison as sort of like a minor inconvenience?
Almost. Although, you know, like there's like the obligatory scene where someone tries to kill one of the dudes. Of course, he's been paid by that drug baron that's, you know, from outside prison. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, you know, like it's all the cliches are here. All the cliches are here. This is like, you know, anyway. Sorry, I was going to make a joke about Smash Brothers Ultimate, but I couldn't pull it off. But all the cliches are here. But like, just to give you an example, like one that I've seen used before and that like people know about, like you escape your cell by taking out the taking off the toilet in your cell, and there's no, like, it's not attached to any plumbing, which raises all sorts of questions. And then, like, when you pull the toilet off the wall, there's a gaping hole there that you can crawl through. And you can see, like, pipes and stuff. But they didn't bother to explain why the toilet was not attached to them. So that kind of stuff. But the idea, basically, is just, like, you're escaping prison. So it's basically, like, you go around in every scene. You see what you can interact with. You try to discover what it is that they want you to do. There might be more than one solution for any given situation, and then you execute it, and you know, it's satisfying enough. But I think it's when you get out of prison that actually the game picks up, because that's when they decided, like, you know what, this is dumb as shit, so we're really gonna run with this. And so my recommendation to anyone who plays this game is to actually look up an achievements guide, because there are scenes that you will trigger that you would never trigger otherwise unless you're actually reading about how to do that. Like, there are specific things that you have to do that trigger scenes that are just like, what the hell is this? What is this doing in this game? Yeah. I've posted a few on my Twitter timeline.
I saw the one where you have them sit down on the the swing set.
Yep. Yeah.
It's so just super awkward.
It is. So you can, like, if you do that, like, one or the other, like, it doesn't actually, like, you can't do it. But so you have to be both near the thing, press the button at the same time, and then they sit down on this kind of, like, not seesaw thing, but, you know, one of those swing sets. And they just look at each other and are just like, what the hell are we doing? I'm like, I don't know. You sat down first. No, I didn't. Yes, you did. Did I?
So weird. It's like, why is that even in the game? Like,
because who sat down first, John?
What's the point? Like, you know,
it's funny, you know? Like, so I actually, yeah, I strongly recommend if you play this game so that you don't miss the actually fun parts, which is like that thing that we just described, follow a guide. And I don't know. Like, there's multiple scenes like that that are just coming out of nowhere, and it's just, they're a delight. Like, that's where the game shines. And anyway, like, so, you know, all the stuff that you would expect from one of these games, like, not these games, but, you know, a prison escape movie, like, eventually, like, you're fleeing from the cops in the woods, and, you have to get new clothes from, like, this, farmhouse, anyway, so, like, there's all sorts of situations that you've seen before in some movie, even though you don't remember exactly where. So, again, all the cliches are there. It's really fun. And yeah, like, I would have come out with a really strong positive impression of it if, they didn't really kind of shed the bed at the end. But I can't go on about this because, like, it's more of a personal, I think, preference. I disagree with the way that the story, like, the direction that the story went, but, you know, I can't really say why. But I would almost recommend people to stop playing before the end because I was kind of like, yeah, I was not impressed. So I'm going to leave it there. But like everything that came before then was just so on point. You know, you get to the drug lord's villa and the, like, as soon as you see like, oh, this villa has two floors, right? Then there's a pool under like this terrace thing. Like you've seen this movie, you know, like there's a body crippled, you know, a bloody body that's going to fall into that pool. Like that's just how it goes. That's what that pool is there for. But also if you want to take a quick dip on your way to shooting the drug lord, you can do that because that's the kind of the game this is. Like you just do like, you know, weird shit on your way to enacting an 80s action movie. So I strongly recommend it. It's been kind of a blast. I also played Bud Spencer and Terrence Hill's Slaps and Beans. Now, did anything that I just said make any sense to any of you?
Nope.
No.
Which words is your... No? You didn't recognize any of the words?
I recognize the word and.
Slaps. Okay.
Slaps. Yeah, okay. So, Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer are two spaghetti western actors. Their real names are apparently Mario Girodi and Carlo Pedersoli. Anyway, probably mispronounced it. But they were, yeah, spaghetti western stars and apparently didn't make it big in the US, but in Quebec anyway, like since every movie, every TV show that are not from here or from France are dubbed, there's functionally not that much difference between like an American movie and like an Italian movie. They both look and sound dubbed. And so I think that's why I've been exposed to these, you know, like they were probably like a cheap movie to put on TV on a Saturday afternoon. So basically like they're like Western comedies for the most part. And it's very slapsticky. It's very like cartoony. There are scenes like, I don't know, like it's the kind of movie where like there's a big fight scene. And like, so Bud Spencer is like this big burly dude and Terrence Hill's the smaller, kind of classically good looking guy. And like, Bud Spencer, like, will knock out someone by bonking them on the head with, like, a closed fist, you know, right on top of the head, like, in a cartoon. And they'll make, like, bad jokes because these comedies were not really that great. So this is the kind of movie that they made. And so this game is apparently, like, a tribute to them. Like, it goes through their career, and it's a side-scrolling, you know, a beat-em-up. But it's a very bad one. It looks great. Like, the art is fantastic. It looks like them. It looks like a 90s 2D art, like, PC game. Like, this could have been a really great-looking adventure point-and-click or something. But it's a beat-em-up. And it's got tons of little, like, cute little touches. Like, all you do is, like, so you punch a bad guys and, like, beer steins will come out of them. And so you pick up the beers and you drink them, and then you can smash them on their heads. Or you can like throw the pint up in the air, and you see like the enemies will look up, and like, you know, that opens them up to you, like, you know, slapping the shit out of them. You step on their toes, and you know, like, they react accordingly. Like it's very much like a cartoon. And, so all that stuff is really great, but the action feels like it's been sped up like 5 times. Everything happens way too fast to make it possible for you to actually plan these things ahead. And also it's super easy. Like you press B once and like it, they slap the guy 3 times, and you do that, like you just mash that button a lot, and, you know, you make short work of them. And I tried, like, there's several difficulty levels, but if you try to raise the difficulty level, there's also mini games, that are mandatory. And if you fail them, they will send you back to the beginning of the stage. And, they become almost impossible on anything other than easy. So it's kind of shitty. So I just bought it because it was on sale and I'm familiar with the source material. And I thought, like, what's the worst that could happen, right? And Karen and I played it for, you know, 10, 15 minutes and got quickly sick of it. It's not good, unfortunately. But I don't know. Go look up old Terrence Hill and Bud Spencer movies. Or don't. Actually, I think we have to make like their entire like 18 movie filmography. We have to put that, you know, for future Patreon episodes. There's a video game for them, so I think that the only requirement for us talking about them has been filled. So I expect us to talk about I don't know, They Call Me Trinity very soon.
There's a Spanish film series about this fat middle-aged guy who, I think he's a police officer. It's a comedy. It's a slapstick comedy series. They're not very good. They've made a million of them. And there's a PS2 game, and it starts with our hero is trapped on the toilet inside of a jetliner while it's being hijacked. And I believe he has to gas up the place with his ass to then resume retaking the plane. And it involves him like picking up forks from the service tray and throwing them like knives and farting and all kinds of stuff. It's a bad thing. It doesn't mean we're going to watch the movies.
No.
No.
That sounded like a winner.
It's Home Alone with IBS and a middle-aged old man.
Again, there's nothing about that I don't like.
Guillaume loves IBS is the bumper sticker for this episode.
It's the best. But yeah, so that's about it. I'm sorry that the one Nintendo game that I talked about was very bad, but sometimes that's how it is. Yeah,
it's okay. I mean, it is what it is. All right, Greg, take us home.
Yeah, not too much to say, really. I got I saw the end game, or the new, relatively recently added ending to Monster Hunter Rise. Shortly before they kind of, the little presentation they had a few weeks ago where they were going to announce the details of the next update, I was already kind of started ramping back up. So I wasn't too far off being able to kind of trigger that final quest by the time it got added. But you know, I still had some more kind of, places in the hunter ranking to get up and a few more kind of urgent quests to trigger, but got there and just cleared it today. It was pretty fun, pretty tough stuff. Either I had pretty suitable gear for it already, but it's just some of these attacks, especially like the sort of double punch of like getting stunned and then something happening, is pretty, even if you've got very kind of defensively robust gear, it's still a risk of getting killed. And of course, with 4 people and 3 feints, you know, being uh, big curtains for the quest. It's it is a risk, but a few failed attempts, and then the last attempt I did, I should have done this sooner, but like it gives you at the start of the quest, you have the item box with just a few basic supplies like some first aid potions and some rations or whatever. But one of them is the kind of like smoke bomb to take you back to base to get you out of a tight spot, and I'd run out of potions, and like I really should have just, as soon as I ran out of potions, like, right, let's walk back. But I hadn't. I was like, God, they've been going for a while. It's like, I think we might be close to killing this thing. So, but then it unleashes this like insane attack. I'm like, oh shit. Just in time. I pull the ripcord on the Farcaster, get out of there, get sort of stock up on potions, come back, and in time to land the killing blow. So screw you. It was, it was fun. Yeah, it was good. It's been good. Played through, I think I'm probably somewhere like 65 hours ish or so. I still haven't really dabbled with like other weapons and stuff as much as I probably should have. It doesn't help like that, especially once you get pretty high up, that things are expensive. It's not great. You know, experimenting early on with crafted different weapons is one thing, because like none of the gear, none of the weapons are that expensive to make. But at this stage, everything, you know, if you want weapons that are actually going to do any damage to the top rank kind of prey and all that, or, you know, want to forge armor that's actually going to be in the right kind of class defensively, everything is very expensive. I know Evan talked about, you know, the sort of ways that you could ensure, you know, you could make money and all that, and I've not really taken advantage of that as much as I should have done either. So I've mostly just sort of stuck to my guns and you know, kind of just forward stuff that I really, really want, and not kind of been more extravagant or experimental. But no, it's nice to actually have a cap to it, although, like I said, it just kind of fit with my natural progression anyway. It wasn't like, unlike Evan, like, I was not waiting around for them to add the ending to the game. It kind of just fell that I got up to the kind of level that, you know, I would be clearing that relatively shortly after they did add it. And of course, they'll be adding plenty more stuff that I imagine I'll chip away at in subsequent weeks. But they're very, very, very enjoyable, Monster Hunter Rise, I've got to say. Okay, the only thing I can say is a couple of times where a quest, you know, a guild quest with other players, I've had just very suddenly it just drops out. And, you know, I'm not sure, you know, if that's on me or what the deal is. But yeah, that's not great. There was one case where I think it was hunting, it might have been two Diablos, you know, this kind of rock dragon thingy, and it's so one of them was dead already, and then the second one had been fighting it for quite a while, and so kind of like everyone, and it drops out, but it doesn't mean the quest is over, but just everyone else is gone, but you could still finish it. And he's like, well, they've cut it down to last faint, so I couldn't afford to faint. I'd be dead, you know, and the quest would be failed if I did. But, you know, maybe this thing is nearly dead, so I'll give it a go. And it took ages. I was trying to kill it for ages. That's the thing, shows you how much damage everybody else is doing, you know, three other people. It makes a huge difference to how quickly these things are going to die. It's just like, by the end of it, I just wish I'd quit, you know, because it was criminy. So yeah, when that happened just a second time, I knew what to do. I was like, I'm going back to the village. But in fact, that has been rare. For the most part, it's, you know, the online play's held up really, really well, and it's been great fun.
Excellent. All right. So as a reminder, when this episode comes out, if you listen to it the day of, E3 is ongoing as you listen, but we are a matter of days away from Nintendo's, Tuesday. Annual Here's What We're Doing for the Remainder of the Year event. And that means you are also about 2 days away from our Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, whatever, 1 a.m. UK, 2 a.m. Europe, whatever time, live show. We will be talking about what Nintendo announced and our reactions to it. So you can join us there. We hope to see you. If not, the episode will come out soon thereafter containing the live show. So that and all the coverage of E3 will be at NintendoWorldReport.com. And in fact, it has already started. So if you're within the range of my voice, there is new E3-related content for you right now at NintendoWorldReport.com. And that, Greg, is when we talk about a good website.
Yeah, I bet it won't be for half as long as what you talked about the shit one for, though. So you're just making my point for me. Sometimes it's more fun to grumble than it is to talk about things that actually work the way they should.
Yeah.
It in a sense, but I actually really was more trying to make sure there's evidence preservation for when the inevitable lawsuit about the scam that is the E3 website comes through. I want to give the ESA the evidence it's going to need tries to sue this company
You wanted there to be something that could function as, you know, one of those sort of Bioshock-type audio logs for the historians of the future, and they're picking through the ruins of the Keeley Wars or whatever. They will know what that crappy E3 website actually functioned like.
Well, and he's not part of this E3, so except for the fact that he is the first name listed on suggested friends, so I bet he gets hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of friend requests, but that's okay. He's not getting alerts to see them anyway. So
he's basically Tom from MySpace.
The Keeley Wars take a new and sinister turn.
A sinister turn, indeed.
Well, on that, cut this episode short because, again, E3 is underway, and our E3 response show will be coming out very soon after this. So you can look forward to that there. But to end the show, Greg, I would like for you to help me out here with some music.
Sure, yeah. Well, we had a request in from James, but obviously not yourself, unless he was having some sort of Fight Club type moment where you have another persona, but that has your name as well, of course.
Bastard!
Because that is the weird thing about that, is that his alternate persona is just him, name-wise, and he forgets his own name, like Gollum or something.
I mean, it's not that uncommon of a name. I mean, I could have two personas both named James.
Yeah, that's true. It's pretty bloody common. But yeah, this is James T. And the request here is that they've been playing the sort of two-pack of Nippon Ichi dungeon crawlers that came out on Switch back in March. We had, Nintendo World Report had a review for it by Philip, 7.5. But James T here, been playing that and picked out some music that enjoyed from it. So the two pack is, let me get this correct, Saviors of Sapphire Wings and Stranger of Sword City Revisited. Yes. And it's specifically Sword City soundtrack that the request comes from here. So James T says, Sword City has pretty killer battle music. The choir and oboes make the song. If you're looking for an epic way to cap an episode, this would be it. So what could be more appropriate than an episode spent mostly talking about a dysfunctional website than this sort of epic?
But not our dysfunctional website.
Just a dysfunctional website. I think this is precisely what James T had in mind when he made this request. And the song itself is called War Song of the Strangers.
Anytime we get to hear you say epic, makes it worth it. And on that, it is time for us to go. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.